On this week's show, our top news, the grassroots are organizing around the Lone Star Agenda. Also, the talking points being put out on property tax reform just don't hold up to scrutiny. And we'll hear which politicians want to shake the money tree. In this week's interview, we're joined by Congressman Lance Gooden to talk about the big spending bill in Congress and some needed reforms on the border. And finally, we have a guest commentary, an autopsy report on what went wrong with election integrity legislation this session. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. Speaking of the web, one big story this week. Not going to cover it on the show this week, so I got to send listeners to the website. Check out the story there, Bonin's Backroom Offer, up at www.texasscorecard.com. Big breaking story from Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan about an arguably illicit offer made to him by Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin. Might address that on the show next week, but for this week, you'll need to check that out on the website, www.texasscorecard.com. With that out of the way, I wanted to move over and talk to Carrie Cheshire, Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Big story this week, the grassroots are organizing around a big agenda, the Lone Star Agenda. Tell us about that.
That's right, Tony. So last week we did see the kind of release of the Lone Star Agenda, an 11-point plan spearheaded by grassroots political activist and donor Don Dyer to really kind of re-energize the state's Republican base going into the election around shared values and issues, many of which languished in the most recent legislative session and failed to pass, leaving voters frustrated, leaving Republicans kind of incensed that their Republican legislature didn't do Republican things.
Yeah, I mean, I think people came out of the legislative session and they're going, man, I'm really dissatisfied with what was done here. And it's kind of going, well, how do we campaign in 2020? It's important that we win these elections in 2020, but how do you campaign around people who've kind of failed you in a legislative session? You know, we can't be the fan club. And I think that's a good thing. Don't want to be the fan club. Well, what's the answer? Let's unite around a common agenda, a common policy.
Well, I think that's right, Tony. You know, Republican voters don't vote Republican because they like the color red or they're big fans of elephants. It's because
I don't know.
Perhaps. But I think that's a very small part. I think most of them are, you know, excited and energized by the issues that unite the party.
That's right.
The sanctity of life, low taxes, limited government. And when citizens see their lawmakers failing to do so many of the things that they promised to do on the campaign trail, and then fail to do even the things in their own best self-interest. You know, if all the media reports are to be believed, and I believe they are, that Democrats are coming with a vengeance in this 2020 election, that there's going to be massive spending in the Lone Star State, then it would make sense for the Republican legislature to, you know, board up the windows and put up some sandbags to make sure that this coming blue wave doesn't wash everything out. So they ought to be trying to secure the elections. They ought to be trying to, you know, pass a spending limit so that the automatic role of government is not to grow, but to at least stay the same size.
That's right.
And instead, you saw them, you know, instead of boarding up the windows, they were lying on the beach sipping pina coladas and talking about how much they were getting along with Democrats.
The storm is coming and they're going, man, isn't this a nice breeze? Right? Let's talk about the Lone Star Agenda, the specifics of what's in there. I mean, it's an actual platform, 11 items across three broad categories. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's right, Tony. And as you can imagine, a lot of these stem from the Republican priorities that have united the Texas GOP for over a decade. Issues like constitutional carry, removing the permit to openly or concealed carry a handgun, which is the status quo in Vermont. So, of course, Bernie Sanders has better gun rights than most folks in Texas. It's ending the automatic deduction of labor union dues by public employees.
Stop not spending money and sending money to the Democrat labor unions.
Tens of millions millions by Democrats in each election. This is something that they're going to use to try and turn the state blue. You know, coming in and having real and tangible efforts to stop taxpayer-funded lobbying. We saw during the legislative session, this was one of the few issues that was actually gutted and killed on the floor of the Texas House as liberal Republicans partnered with their Democrat allies to fight against the conservative grassroots.
Yeah.
And as you know, Tony, over 40% of lobbyists in Austin have government contracts. They're using tax dollars to lobby the government for more government.
Huge problem. Well, I think it's a really great thing to see the grassroots uniting around a positive agenda, things that they actually want to accomplish in the long run. And we'll have to see whether the legislators start to pay attention to it as we move through the election cycle.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn to Empower Texans President Ross Kessig. Ross, you're up with an analysis of what's really going on with property tax relief. You know, the legislature passed a property tax reform and relief bill or bills, and they're making some claims about them, but those claims really don't hold water.
Right. So when after the bill was passed, House lawmakers came out, the folks who were championing the bill, and said, you know, here's talking points. Here's to explain what the timing and the impact of the legislation is going to be as it relates to property taxes. And when the bill analysis came out from the Texas Education Agency, which had much more specifics, they didn't really seem to line up. And so what we found out was the talking points from lawmakers were kind of misleading, and I think led to a lot of confusion, and no one in the media really picked this up.
Yeah, so let's talk about how it's misleading, what's wrong with it. Specifically, what's the delta there? What's the difference?
So House lawmakers had said, okay, this is what this property tax relief is gonna do. In the year 2020, it's gonna lower school tax rates by 8 cents. Then the next year, there's going to be another reduction in your property tax rates. Then this property tax 2.5% cap thing that the governor pushed is going to go into effect. Well, the problem is that there's not 2 years of rate buy down. There's 1 year, and it doesn't happen in 2020. It starts actually this year, in 2019.
Okay.
So the year in which taxpayers are going to see their school tax rates impacted in what they pay is going to be this year. It's not going to be next year. And so I think there was some confusion about when the relief goes into effect, the length of time, and then how much relief people are actually going to get.
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues. You know, the timing is kind of interesting that there's confusion there, but then they kind of want to say, well, it's almost like a cumulative, so like 8 cents, 5 cents. Oh, well, then it's 13 total. And it's like, no, not really.
Yeah, the way the talking point reads is that there will be a reduction in school property tax rates by an average of 8 cents in 2020 and 13 cents in 2021. Well, some people read that to say, does that mean 8 cents 1 year and additional 13 cents the next year? Or does it mean 8 cents 1 year and then like another 5 for a total of 13? It's not really clear.
And so the TEA, what does the TEA tell us?
Yeah, the TEA says there'll be 1 year of rate compression where tax rates will go down. They don't really quote an average. And they say the next year, the property tax cap will go into effect, which could lead to some rate reductions. So in other words, the state lawmakers made it sound like there was this 2 year rate buy down and that it was going to be pretty significant. I don't think it's going to be as significant as what they claimed. And, it's going to happen sooner and not last as long.
So. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to me. You know, we all know politicians always want to, you know, pound their chest and claim things, but people get their property tax bills. So,
right.
You know, making claims on this seems like a foolish thing to do.
So here's what taxpayers should expect. They should see their property tax rates cut in 2019. After 2019, there may be another small rate reduction the next year, but the net effect is their tax bills may go down $40 to $50 this year, and next year they're going to go up again. Now, they're going to go up slower than before, but we're going to have to revisit tax relief if people want to see lasting relief next session.
Thanks for putting the research in on that, Ross. Now, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capital Bureau Chief. Got an article up, taxpayers all shook up.
I suppose you could say that. Yes, you have one of the biggest lobby organizations in the state that represents cities telling local officials at a conference in Austin that they need to shake the money tree.
Now, your father might have told you money doesn't grow on trees, but for local governments, it does grow on trees.
It's us.
And taxpayers all... are the trees.
Yes.
Let's explain, let's decode this. What is the Texas Municipal League? What are they doing?
Yeah, so the Texas Municipal League, this is a taxpayer-funded lobby organization here in Austin. Pretty much all the cities across the state, they pay into it. They send their city council members, their mayors, to come down to conferences and trainings. And essentially, no surprise here, a lot of what they talk about, ways to bilk the taxpayers, opposing property tax reform, opposing forced annexation reform. And in this particular situation, literally having a segment at their conference here for newly elected city officials on how they can shake the money tree. That was the exact words they used in a presentation given.
Okay, so you've got this organization that represents local governments. Mm-hmm. They consistently oppose taxpayer reforms, but it's really this, you know, this is indicative of indicative of the culture that you see in this organization amongst local government officials, where it's very adversarial with taxpayers, as opposed to saying, "Hey, how do I serve these people?" You know, no, what can I get out of these people?
Exactly. I guess you could say it's the root of a lot of the problems they have here, to throw another pun in. But that's exactly right. You've got these organizations that we are paying for, you know, as taxpayers, and then there they are. We actually see them holding these presentations where they're talking about how they can, you know, they can take advantage of taxpayers. So have to give a thank you though to one person. You know, nobody would have known about this. This is all closed door stuff.
Sure.
But you actually had one newly elected city councilman up in Corsica, Chris Woolsey, who took to Facebook and sent out the picture and said, this is ridiculous, guys. Everybody needs to know about this.
Yeah, rightfully came out and said, hey, I'm at this conference and I'm wanting to learn about doing my job as a councilman. Yeah. I don't want to learn how to shake the money tree. No. That's not appropriate.
Exactly. And then it was funny enough, you know, just moments later, you had the mayor of Corsicana issuing a statement saying, I don't agree with this. This was a poor choice of terms. But, you know, that's one city. I mean, you think about all the people that are at this conference and the people that are a part of this organization. I think a lot of taxpayers have to ask themselves, are their local cities paying into this? Probably. And if they are, is that really a good use of money?
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, Congress this past week just passing a new budget deal, spending a bunch of money and expanding, blowing past the debt limit. And I wanted to talk to one of our Republican congressmen from Texas who is on the right side of that issue, and also talk about some other things related to the border. But I want to welcome on the show Congressman Lance Gooden. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got some great stuff you're doing related to the border, possibly more important, or almost certainly more important, really, than spending issues. But spending is very important, and we've got this deal moving through Congress. Tell us a little bit about what is going on there and why you voted against it.
So, you know, what this deal was the four leaders, so to speak, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, and Kevin McCarthy. They were all in a room with Steve Mnuchin, and they started talking about this a few weeks ago, seriously. And they decided, and then they came back to their members and said, this is our deal. It's so wonderful. Let's pass it. On the Republican side, we were told about the good things in the bill. And there are a few good things in the bill. The good provisions are it funds the military and it keeps the Hyde Amendment. The negative is it just continues to grow the budget. And anytime Democrats are celebrating a deal, I'm very skeptical. And
yeah,
that's what was happening this week.
That's a good touchstone. You know, if the Democrats are excited about it.
Right. The Democrats were celebrating and the Republicans were trying to sell it. I didn't see Nancy trying to sell this to her members. She just said, hey, we got a great deal. And they said, yeah, we did. Let's vote for it. Republicans, on the other hand, I saw a sales job. I saw a president who I respect and support and love deeply. he said he was for it, but I, you know, you can tell when President Trump is really for something and when he's just kind of blah on it. And I understand the position he was in. He didn't want turmoil between now and the next election, and he didn't want us to be in a scenario in 12 months where we're in a crisis. And so I think he did what he had to do. But conservatives, and for that matter, a majority of the Republicans, our position was, if we have to cancel the summer break, some call it a recess, some call it a 6-week vacation,
yeah,
call it what you want.
Sure.
But if you're running a business and your business is bankrupt and you're about to take out more lines of credit, you typically don't go on vacation for 6 weeks.
Well, and an opportunity to try and do something. Yeah. I mean, when I look at this, it's a kick the can down the road kind of deal. And you look at increasing the debt limit, it's like we're going in either two directions. We can either hold the debt flat and try and grow our way out of this, or we continue to add to it. And that means, you know, at some point in the, you know, near or distant future, you're going to have serious inflation, and we're just going to have to inflate our way out. And that means everybody's savings are shot. I mean, it'd be a complete disaster.
And what it boils down to is elections matter, and it would probably be unreasonable for any of us to say that we were going to get some great spending cut deal as long as Nancy Pelosi is running the House. However, some might say, well, Lance, when the Republicans were in control of the House before she was, we didn't cut government either. And I would say, yeah, you're right, which is why if we're going to take the House back, we've actually got to promise to Americans, make a promise to Americans that we're actually going to do something with it. I think President Trump got some bad advice from Speaker Ryan in the last 6 months of last year. You had Speaker Ryan saying, let's don't focus on this wall. Let's don't get all of your promises executed. Let's try to keep the House. We're going to turn off moderates. And then what happened? We lost the House. And I think the president and certainly many Republicans that were there and that I'm still serving with now, they regret not going for things while they could.
That's right. You know, why are you there if you're not there to do something and do the right thing? And, oh, yeah, by the way, you've got to give people something to vote for.
And look at when Barack Obama was president. In his first term, he was unapologetically going for his health care plan. He got everything he wanted, and he didn't care about what was going to happen in the midterm. Yes, he got clobbered in the midterms. After he, in his first midterm cycle, if you recall, you know, he took office after the 2008 elections. At the 2010 elections were disastrous. But in his mind, he was thinking, you know, I got everything I wanted in my first 2 years. So what? We didn't get everything we wanted in the first 2 years of this Trump administration.
That's right.
And we still lost.
Yeah, so, you suffer the losses and you didn't bank those gains.
That's right.
Let's shift from talking about spending to something. I mentioned this. I said it might be more important. You're out with a new bill called the End Child Trafficking Now Act. I think this is really important. Tell folks a little bit about what that bill is, but more importantly, you know, what the problem is that it's seeking to solve.
Sure. Let me talk about the problem first. The problem is, if you come over across the border and you're seeking asylum or whatever your claim is, if you're by yourself and you're over 18 years of age, you just get in line with everyone else. If you come across with a family and you say, we're a family here, then you get expedited service and you can only be held for up to 20 days. And then the government has to release you and your family. And so what we've seen is these child traffickers, they come over with children and they say, this is our family. And so they're not held for longer than 20 days. They're all released. And then after the release date, some of these children who aren't even a part of a family unit, they've just been trafficked across the border. They are what we call recycled, and they're taken back south of the border only to be used again to gain preferential access when they come across the border.
Yeah, this is amazing to me. The Democrats want to focus on what's going on with detaining families at the border, but the alternative to me appears to be letting people who we have no idea whether these are actually families or whether they're child traffickers. There's very little information to be able to say who's who and who's real and what right. the appropriate thing. Because the last thing you want to do is say, oh, here's somebody who's abducted a child and just let them walk free. That's a disaster.
It's a disaster, and it's exactly what's happening. So what this bill does is it requires DNA testing of all children that come across the border with an adult. And that DNA testing tells whether or not they are actually related. If they are not related, perhaps they've been adopted, whatever the scenario, then you've got to provide documentation. If you can't provide that documentation, then you're going to be treated as a child trafficker. You're going to be arrested, and then the children are going to be taken in as unaccompanied minors. And what this is, what we hope to accomplish here is to discourage this child recycling that's taking place and put it into law.
I think I saw it in maybe one of the press releases or one of the articles. I mentioned, like an example, there's a guy maybe from Honduras who he purchased a child to use as a kind of, it's essentially like using children as a get out of jail free card.
Yep, that's right. It's horrible. And so what I'm finding is Democrats aren't really all that excited about it, because to get excited about this, you've got to admit that there's a problem at the border. And so we've just recently rolled this out, and then we're not back in session until early September. So we're going to be making a big push for this bill and reaching out to some of the more reasonable Democrats that might get on board with this, because to talk about what a humanitarian crisis that is and to say how you care so much about these people coming across the border and then not agree that we should do something about child trafficking seems a bit unreal, but unfortunately nothing shocks me these days.
Well, and it's, you know, but you have to admit that there's the problem and the depth of the problem, which I think, you know, we all know, but people want to deny that. Obviously, I think people out there would be looking to say DNA testing, are there some privacy concerns? Is there any way of protecting, how do you protect against any privacy concerns involved with
Yeah, so let's talk about who we are concerned about. We're concerned about immigrants coming across the border's privacy concerns. They're not citizens. They don't have the same rights as an American citizen. However, we're still going to protect their privacy. So if we run this test and it comes back positive, those results are destroyed on the border immediately. If it comes back negative, then we've got to work to make sure that we prevent this child from being recycled again, and that evidence will be used against whoever is being prosecuted. So if you're a legitimate family unit coming across the border for asylum, you're not going to be stored in some government database where we're keeping DNA tests. But the answer to that question about privacy, isn't the safety of a child potentially being trafficked more important, and shouldn't that take preference over whether or not their DNA is in some database?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something. I think they're all concerns that people would have, and you have to balance these things, but balancing them appropriately. And it sounds like you're already on top of that. I guess, you know, you touched on this a second ago, and this is a more broad question. You know, you served in the Texas legislature. This is your first term now up in Congress. You know, is it surprising to you? I mean, we all know that there's a problem in Washington, but now you're here in the midst of it. What really has surprised you about it?
You know, it's interesting. The swamp, as Washington is referred to, is certainly swampy, but I'm finding that Austin has its own swamp / sewage qualities.
That's right.
One of the things I don't miss about Austin is the constant kind of the receptions, the parties, the dinners. They were always with lobbyists. And lobbyists would come in your office and say, hey, I'd like to buy your office lunch tomorrow or this week. And it was just constant, constant, constant. In Washington, because of the ethics laws, which I think Austin should, if there's something that Austin should copy from Washington, it's some ethics laws.
That's right.
I can't have dinner with a lobbyist unless I pay for it myself. And I love that, because I don't find myself spending my evenings with lobbyists. I have dinner, if my wife is not in town, I'm typically having dinner with one of my colleagues or three or four of my colleagues. and I'm getting to know them because we're there. So we're there frequently, but for such a little amount of time. We're only in DC for 3 nights a week, every
right,
week.
Right.
And so I have very little time that I'm actually there. I'm there a lot, but I'm not there for a long time when I am there. And so I find that I'm closer to my colleagues, my freshman colleagues, especially, because there's not this, this lobby social scene that's just kind of hovering around the place.
That's what I hear too, is a lot of people go there and they say, look, there are a lot of problems up here, but you know, a lot of problems back home that we need to take care of. So we're running out of time. Tell folks back home if they want to learn more about this End Child Trafficking Now Act or learn more about the work you're doing there in Congress, how can they connect with you?
I'm on Facebook and my Twitter is at Rep Lance Gooden. And we would love to add you to our emails. If anyone wants to, my email address is lance.gooden@mail.house.gov. And we'd be happy to add you and keep in touch. But really, if any of your listeners are in DC at any point, we'd love to host them and, help show them around or talk about issues, whatever we could do. We appreciate your work.
Great. Well, appreciate you coming on the show and appreciate the good work you're doing there fighting for taxpayers and fighting for some sanity down on our border. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Your state lawmaker probably campaigned as a conservative, as someone who would go to Austin to cut spending and limit government. But did he keep that promise? At index.empowertexans.com, you can see how your lawmaker voted on the major issues of the legislative session. Things like property tax relief, the state budget, and regulatory reform. You can also view his score on the Fiscal Responsibility Index and decide if he needs a pat on the back, a wag of the finger, or perhaps a permanent vacation from public service. The Fiscal Responsibility Index is the premier tool for taxpayers to hold their lawmakers accountable. Check us out today at index.empowertexans.com.
Texas legislators failing to do enough to secure our elections this session. Daniel Greer, executive director with Direct Action Texas, in this week with a guest commentary on that topic.
Texas elections are flawed. We've got mail-in ballot fraud, we have non-citizens voting, and we have public resources being used to pay for political campaigns. Hi, I'm Daniel Greer, Executive Director of Direct Action Texas, with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. The list of flaws in Texas elections isn't decreasing over time, it's getting worse. In 2016, voters on both sides of the aisle were certain that the election was flawed. Republicans were certain that non-citizens were skewing vote totals, and Democrats were certain that Russians had infiltrated the voting booth. Trust in elections has been undermined, and by extension, trust in our government after the votes are counted. Texas lawmakers should have worked this session to remedy this mistrust. Unfortunately, nothing was done. A comprehensive examination of needed reforms and how they failed to become law rests blame for this on Stephanie Click, a Republican from Fort Worth. She served as the chairman of the Elections Committee in the Texas House of Representatives. This session, the Priority Election Integrity Bill was Senate Bill 9 by Brian Hughes. Senate Bill 9 was an omnibus bill that would have curbed things like illegal assistance, where people go into the booth and tell voters how to vote. It would have increased civil and criminal penalties for breaking election law and provided for automatic audits of elections. It also included a popular provision ensuring Texas voting machines have a paper ballot backup. The bill passed out of the Senate with 2 months to spare. Instead, it languished in the House, in Click's committee. She didn't schedule the bill for a hearing for 2 weeks, allowing time for opposition groups to mount an aggressive push to kill the bill. When the bill was finally heard, it had been stripped of paper ballot backups. The hearing was needlessly brutal, with one state Republican executive committee member being heckled and mocked while he gave testimony. Inexcusable behavior, but useful in killing a needed reform. Senate Bill 9 died without receiving a vote on the floor of the House, as did other bills. Bills that would have stopped non-citizens from registering to vote, bills to outlaw the use of public funds for political advertising, and bills to outlaw the use of P.O. boxes to register voters en masse. All these bills died. It's unacceptable that legislation crucial to accurate administration of elections languished this session. Action in governing is transparency, and this session was short on this when it comes to election integrity. I'm Daniel Greer with Direct Action Texas. This has been a Texas Scorecard radio commentary.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. As I mentioned at the top of the program, though, if you haven't read Michael Quinn Sullivan's article, Bonin's Backroom Offer, up at TexasScorecard.com, go check that out right now. Very important. Until next week, thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.